Hi, I'm Clemmy Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. My ambition with this podcast is to remind people and myself that every person has a story. The same goes with brands. And in this case, the brand in question is our sponsor, F&F Clothing, who have absolutely challenged my preconceptions of what a supermarket retailer can offer. There's an unbelievable amount that goes on behind the scenes at F&F Clothing. They're one of the biggest retailers to take action towards becoming a sustainable brand, as well as their commitment to inclusive sizing and diversity. All these unexpected but excellent things are what make me feel chuffed to have them on board as a sponsor. So a big thank you to F&F Clothing for partnering with Honestly Podcast and supporting my mission of transparency, truth and breaking the mould of what's expected. Hi and welcome to Honestly Podcast. I'm Clemmy Telford and I'm here to do one of my favourite things. No, not ask people about the details of their journey for no apparent reason. Have a properly frank open chat about tricky, sticky and often not spoken about subjects. Today we're talking to the founder of an Instagram account called Blue Bag Life, a space dedicated to sharing the experiences of those affected by prison, addiction and as part of that, mental health. Her partner Elliot, who is currently serving time in prison and recovering from a heroin and crack addiction, she is Lisa Selby. Hello Lisa, how are you?
Hello, I'm all right. How are you doing?
It's very, very nice to meet you in real life. We've had one of those weird things where we've been connected online for a little bit and working towards this point. To get us both in the mood, I'm going to start with a light-hearted quickfire round. As the title suggests in this podcast, it's all about being honest. So here we go. A great meal or great sex?
Great sex.
Fame or fortune?
Oh, fortune.
Leave or remain?
that's obvious, isn't it?
Yeah. Reincarnation, probable or not a chance?
Probable.
Social media, good or bad?
Good.
What star sign are you?
Cancer.
Have you ever committed a crime?
Yes.
A bit more lighthearted and from personal experience and conversation with my husband. Have you ever peed in a swimming pool?
Yes.
When did you last cry?
Yesterday.
Biggest regret?
I don't have any regrets.
When are you happiest?
When I am open.
And what do you think you'd miss most if you were in prison?
Being able to talk to loved ones whenever I wanted to.
See, there we go. We're straight in. That's already got me. We are here to talk about a big topic. And now we're a bit better acquainted. We're going to move on to that. And your big topic is prison. Most of the topics I've covered on this podcast, I have a level of knowledge of, but prison isn't one of them. I grew up near HM Aylesbury, which is a young offenders unit. I remember driving past it. Can't remember what car I had, Ford Fiesta. And because it's right in the centre of town and trying to picture the life of the kids inside. So I'm really delighted to try and get a bit of an insight into that with you, Lisa. So, big question, tell me about you and why you started Blue Bag Life and what the name means.
Yeah, everyone asks about Blue Bag Life, and actually it was only meant to be a temporary name where you think, oh, I'm going to sort that out later. But I was living with Elliot and I kept on finding all these little bits of blue plastic around the house, and I just thought they were just really rubbish shopping bags, you know, disintegrating everywhere. And I didn't know that it's actually the wraps from heroin.
Oh.
So it's not always in a blue bag, but...
Quite often.
Quite often, and I suppose it depends who's dealing, but it was often blue for heroin and white for crack.
Wow.
I got really addicted to photographing blue bags absolutely everywhere.
And once you start seeing them, do you see them all over the place?
Yeah, and I think about them being so, they're so vibrant, aren't they? Yet they just sink into the background. So I thought about addiction. And when I see one in a tree, I think of a lost one due to heroin addiction or whatever addiction we've lost people to. And if it's in the gutter, it's sort of, it's quite poetic, yeah. You know. And then everyone started sending me blue bags and saying, I was thinking about you today. And,
really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. So for those who don't follow Lisa, and you definitely should, it's quite hard to articulate it, but I, in researching this podcast, went right back to the beginning, which was absolutely fascinating. And it's actually a culmination of a few stories interwoven with each other, but it starts in the aftermath of your mother dying from a heroin addiction.
That's right, isn't it?
She actually died from breast cancer.
Oh, did she?
But so she had lots of letters about chemotherapy, but she was using quite heavily at the time. But
were you close to her, or were you part of that journey with her?
I wasn't really. I wasn't raised by my mum. She, I was a one-night stand for a start, and I also found out later on that I was due to be aborted because she didn't want to have a child because she knew that she suffered with addiction. But my dad really wanted a child and said, please, can you have this baby? I'll take care of her. And it was quite unknown back then for a man to take care of a child. Now it's really common.
But he raised you?
Yeah, with my grandparents. So I'd see her once a year. She wasn't really allowed to see me on her own, and she'd clean up the flat, and she had a bit of a party scene around her. So, yeah, I wasn't really allowed around that. And there were a couple of times where I was found as a baby crawling around in drying out mushrooms and so on, yeah.
And from her story, which is the beginning of it, it then moves on to your partner's Elliot's story and his addiction and eventual imprisonment. So tell me about that chapter. I mean, it's hard to reduce into a quick conversation.
So I met Elliot at AA, and he had told me that he was recovering from heroin addiction, and I just didn't really pay any attention to it for some reason. I think I was so used to blocking it out in my life because I hid in my mum at school. Mm. You know, I kept on saying I haven't got a mum and not really going any further into that. And then got into a relationship with Elliot, and he hid his using, and eventually it started to come to the surface. And he met my mum once.
Really?
Yeah. She absolutely loved him.
Really?
I was asking her questions because I knew that she was going to be dying soon. And they were comparing dead veins and talking about medication. And that was what the conversation was revolved around. And I just thought it's not the perfect meeting, is it?
No.
But she understood him and he understood her.
Yeah, so it's something kind of a bit special about that, I suppose. So talk about the time with it coming up to him eventually being sentenced.
Yeah. So I was teaching at university at the time. I teach art. And I was watching him inject in the mornings. And I tried everything to help him. But you can't help someone, can you? If they can't help themselves, and also if they're desperately sick. So he was meant to come travelling around Asia with me. And I had an exhibition in Hong Kong. And he just couldn't come. He was too sick. And so I left and didn't come back for about 6 months because I knew that I was going to be in those circles and I didn't want to get involved in it. Mm-hmm. So while I was in Asia, I found out that he'd been arrested.
So you weren't actually in the UK when he got sentenced. You came back to him being in prison.
We had split up. Because we'd lost contact. It's really hard to keep in contact with someone who's in active addiction.
Yeah.
And I was on a boat towards a Thai island when someone told me. So the contrast between those things.
Yeah, and you just must have felt a million miles away in every single sense.
Yeah, he said when he got locked up in that cell and he was detoxing and sweating, it really hit home and he missed me and wanted me there, but he still had no way of contacting me. He didn't know what my number was.
And then how did you go about contacting him on your return?
I decided to write him a letter with all the things I've been up to. I miss you. I would like to talk to you. And yeah, again, more of an understanding of what happened. And it went to the wrong prison and it eventually ended up in his hands. And while I was teaching, I got a phone call that I couldn't answer, but I knew it was him.
Did you?
And then I went to go and visit him for the first time, and that's when all this started.
And how long had it been since you last saw him? What was the time frame on that?
It's about a year.
And how long ago was that? What year did he...
2016.
Okay, so...
I had lost a lot of weight. I was drinking quite a lot. My drinking had got hold of me, and he had lost quite a lot of weight. And so when we met up, he was like... Yeah, completely different people.
That's so strange. And also, for anyone who goes travelling, you've had all this other stuff, haven't you? You've just had a massive dose of culture and then you come back and, yeah, it must have been absolutely mad.
Seeing him walk out. It's a real moment when you first go into prison where you see your loved one walking out with everyone else.
Yeah, and, I was about to ask you about that.
And your chairs are locked down and they're possibly wearing a bib and that you're not allowed to walk back out with them. And you're just sat in this room that's really busy.
And I read, actually, you did an installation called Bang Up at Outpost, and you were talking about, or in the footage, it's talking about how you can only embrace for the first 5 minutes. And then do they literally like ring a bell and you have to sit down, or is it just...
So you've got a tray of food often. So you're walking over with a tray of food and then they might be coming out. So you have to quickly put the tray down.
Why a tray of food? That's just the kind of...
If you line up before they come through, then you're not wasting that time. You want that precious
time. So it's always
time.
Over a meal time, is it busy?
You can get something from the canteen. I wouldn't call it a meal. A few quavers in a polystyrene container because they don't trust you with the crisp packet, you know.
Really?
And then you're allowed to embrace... quick kiss, then you have to sit down and you get another one of those at the end of the visit, unless you're on enhanced, which means you can sit next to each other, which is a really big deal.
Yeah.
But usually it's holding hands over the table so they can be seen.
And is that the same for children visiting their parents?
Children, it's a bit different. They have special visits.
A bit more.
Yeah, I don't really know much about that because it just
feels like a mad concept, isn't it? If you're like visiting a parent and then you're told, you know, for a child. But So I have a very preconceived, like, kind of TV version of prison, I suppose, as we all do, because that's the only way we see it. Is there anything that surprised you about prison that you hadn't expected?
I think just how you don't really see that much drama. I've seen one fight in the visits, but it's just quite boring, you know. And everyone thinks it's drugs and violence, and of course that exists. But mostly it's sitting with yourself and missing your loved ones.
Yeah. It's very easy to forget about the human stuff of it. Like, I'm kind of intrigued about what's the food like and what's the routine like. And does Elliot talk to you about that? How is the food?
Elliot eats so much food. I'm actually scared about when he comes out.
Well, when he has to go and get it. Well, I've read the thing about him really eating a lot of porridge.
Yeah, a lot of porridge because no one else wants
so
it.
So he'll be, I'll have that.
Yeah, and he also sometimes works on the canteen just so he can get extra portions. He's got, it's like his addiction has fed into food a little bit. It's generally chicken and rice. He said the more healthy options are best to stay away from because they tend to be quite brown.
Oh, really? And how much does he get outside?
Well, he's in DCAT now, and DCAT is an open prison, which doesn't mean that you can just go out whenever you want.
No.
But there are periods where you can go out. I don't get to see him all that much because we're quite a distance. They end up all over the place.
So they get moved around, again, me being totally naive, they get moved around relatively regularly, do they?
Yeah, so it could be to do with change of category, it could be, there's so many reasons, it could be a court case, and lots of people will end up getting three trains, two Ubers, a couple of buses.
For a visit,
yeah, and when you've got kids in tow, it's a lot harder, and then suddenly you might have booked your tickets and then they're somewhere else, so as soon as you get into that routine...
Finding your feet somewhere, it moves again.
Yeah. When you first go in, you'll get your mugshot taken. And now they're doing these facial recognition things so they can see who's bringing in drugs. So it's adding to that trauma for us. And then it's put side by side with their mugshot, which it's basically a picture of them when they're at their most traumatic time. And so you're both there just staring wide-eyed into the system.
Mm.
You know, when people see these mugshots, they're actually, and you think, oh, these look like big, bad people.
Yeah, but we're not.
The photograph's being taken by an officer, and they're not looking at us, the audience. They're looking at the officer who's been part of this really traumatic process for them.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
And it's not an authorised photo. They haven't given their permission.
For that image.
But it's needed for ID. They're often at their worst. They're thinking about losing their children. Yeah. They're thinking about losing their love and what's going to happen to them. And then you've got camera right in your face going bam.
Here's something you might not know about F&F Clothing. They work with Genealogia. They are the industry's first software that can share the environmental impact of a pair of jeans. Yep, Each pair is graded on how sustainable they are. The lower the score, the more sustainable the garment is. This means they're continuously monitoring and reducing their environmental footprint. I know, right? Surprising, but great. Going back to you talking about your mugshot, how much as a family member or a loved one do you feel like you're in this system as well?
Well, we directly feel the harm of prison, and often people will talk about the person in prison and, oh, they should write a book. If they're lucky enough to have loved ones around them and supporting them, we don't really get that much attention. We get a lot of pitiful looks and, you know, as if we're really weak. But lots of people are holding families together, holding yeah. jobs together, trying to support their partner and putting some good free graft into rehabilitation.
Yeah.
And I do believe that loved ones are a big key to rehabilitation.
Of course.
And we're not getting recognised for this. We're not getting met at the prison gates by anybody.
Yeah, how does that look for you then, if you were right? Like, from the moment he's gone in, how do you, are you supported? Are there...
Not at all. Not at all. You walk in, you have got no idea what's going on. If you've looked on a website, you might have a clue. You're often getting turned away because you've got ripped jeans or something else on. The prisons aren't next to any shops usually. They're quite
out
of the way.
So there's dress codes for visitors.
Yeah. So you could be waiting for ages, getting really nervous and getting turned away immediately. And if you've got a child on you and you're wearing the wrong thing, if you can't find anything around you, that's it. Your visit is done. There's no one there to greet you to say you're going to go into the prison
hall.
Yeah,
this is what it's going to feel like.
Yeah, and it's going to be really stressful for you. These are the things you need to take into account. This is what's happening next. You just find out as you're going along and from other people who've been through it.
And trying to figure it out on the fly.
Yeah, on secret social media groups. Really? That are all closed because everyone's hiding away to either protect their loved one or because they're scared of stigma surrounding prison. And, you know, a lot of people do believe in punishment, and those people come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, I'm sure with all these things, people never fall the same way that you'd expect. You know, sometimes it's the people you least expect who will support you, and mm-hmm. it's the people you thought would support you don't. That's often the case, isn't it, when you've got any crisis in life?
It's yeah, people. They'll say, I don't want a criminal around me or my children. A criminal. He's now a criminal and a prisoner. He's labelled all these things by some people. And you'll notice yourself going into visits with dark circles under your eyes and your hair's not as shiny. And people, at first you go in all your best clothes.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years later, you notice
it.
Yeah, you're just worn down by the system. And why shouldn't I be respected? Because I'm keeping this yeah. person together. Crime rates could reduce through love, but you've got to show care in order for someone to change.
Forward.
Otherwise, aren't they just going to get more
yeah,
bitter?
Where do we go?
Yeah.
This is kind of a tangent, but only again from following you, that you want to have kids, don't you? And trying for kids while your partner is in prison. I mean, as anyone who's tried to get pregnant, it's stressful enough when you're peeing on a stick and trying to do it at the right time. But it must be extremely challenging for you.
Yeah, I never wanted children, actually. Never wanted children. And I had such a... Well, with my mum, I had my nan as an example, but I just thought that it was hereditary because her mum didn't really care for her. And I thought there was something there where in the family line that I was exactly the same. And I was really fearful of that. But Elliot really wants children. And I started to think about it again. And this world of getting pregnant, you know all
yeah,
about mum bloggers. I've got so many mum bloggers that are encouraging me all of the time. Mums on Instagram who are like, you're going to be fantastic, and checking out my cycle for me. Oh. And so he's in DCAT, which means we probably get once a month to see each other. So 2 days, once a month.
So you try and time it, obviously, at the right time.
We don't get a choice in that end
of
timing.
So literally the stars need to be aligned and the...
Yeah, I mean, we do get a choice for town visits, but not for home visits. So There has to be a certain amount in between. So we just go for it whenever we can.
As does every couple who's trying to. But that also, that shows a huge, of course, because you're in love with him, but a huge level of investment that you feel positive for Elliot's future, don't you? If you want to have a baby with him.
I wouldn't be continuing the relationship if I didn't have a belief that he wanted to recover and stay in recovery. There, of course, there's a chance that he could go back to it, but there's a chance that anyone can go back to anything. And if you don't have faith in the person you're with, then they're possibly not going to have faith in themselves.
Yeah.
So this is the life that he wants now. He started writing a lot for the account. He writes all about his experiences. And actually, he said, I'm a pretty good writer, I think. And the key is, you know, like how on Instagram you do these chunks every day and there's the word limit.
Yeah.
It's been really helpful for him not to bash it out all at once.
Couldn't be from more different worlds, but we've talked a bit before that Instagram can be complete therapy, can't it? Because it just gets a little bit out of your head.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you how, like, when he is out for those home visit or town visit, how's that for him? Because what kind of time frame would he be out for?
Well, towards the end, it's 3 or 4 nights. So he's all right at the beginning.
Yeah,
really,
and then you
excited.
Get that sense of doom.
Yeah, towards the end. And then he just wants to get back as quickly as he can, just because...
To get it over with.
Yeah. And he says, don't come to the station with me. I can't do all this.
The goodbye.
Yeah. And then when they get back to prison, usually it's really... Tough, depressing. You're back there and you're just counting down to the next time. In a lot of prisons now, they've got phones in their cells that aren't mobile phones, but they're kind of computerized systems.
Right.
And they have to work for credit to put that credit onto the phone. And it just promotes people being closer to their families.
Yes.
Really, everyone's phoning their families and getting those bonds stronger.
Yeah.
And it's worse, actually, when they haven't got a phone in their cell, because you can't have phone sex. And well, you can, but they'll just be on the phone on the landing.
Oh,
and
God.
It's just a bit...
Yeah, awkward.
Yeah.
And also for you, there must be times when you, like, not just for the sex, but when you want to reach out to him for your own sanity, you know? That's the thing about a relationship. You both need each other, don't you?
Yeah, just imagine if your partner is always the one calling you and you can never call them.
Yeah, and then they're calling you at the time that isn't quite right for you, you know, that's the thing, isn't it? Because I was going to ask you, when you do have your visits, the time together, there's that awful pressure, isn't there, to then suddenly get on really well and not end up having a massive row about something stupid.
Which is what when they first go to prison, they've often been lying.
Yeah, so you want to talk to them.
This is presuming that they're guilty, right? Yeah, you want to talk to them, you want to talk through all of those things, but you can't necessarily do that because you don't want to end that hour or two on an argument.
Yeah.
So you want to soak in everything. And in a way, sometimes it's helpful because you can do things in small chunks. Just go, we should talk about this for 15 minutes.
But yeah, again, you've got no one guiding you through those conversations.
No one guides us at all. I think in DCAT now, there are some options to have couples counselling.
Yeah.
But we got the forms for that and then he got moved to a different prison.
And how often did you say that can happen, that they can move?
Well, Elliot's moved, I think, 4 or 5 times.
Yeah. And how much warning would he have, or you both have, about that?
They tell you on the day.
Oh, right. Literally, pack up your stuff, you're off.
Yeah, and you better pack it up quickly, otherwise they're going to do it for you after you leave.
Really?
He's had all of his stuff left in a cell before.
And that's
all of your letters, even any saucy photographs that have got through.
Yes, I saw that you did a pastiche, I suppose it was, of those kind of calendars of girls sitting on car bonnets and you recreated it. You looked excellent, though, even if it was ironic.
I got people saying, sending me messages going, you look well fit on that car. And I'd be like, it wasn't really about that, you know, I was trying to...
do something. I got it. You did look excellent. So what are your hopes for your Instagram account for Blue Bag Life?
I want to build a community. It's really hard to build that community when you keep on getting posts deleted because you've mentioned the word heroin or crack. I want to join with other communities. There's a lot of help out there. There's just not enough funding mm-hmm. to support the need, and talk around the country about what's going on in the system and talk about it from our side and trying to fill the gaps. Also, I think the main thing is to break down the stigma. If someone is in prison, then they're doing their time. You know, you don't need to hide that fact. How can we all help that person? And how can we help the family who are trying to help them instead of forcing them to hide in basements or tell their children different stories about what's going on? We should all be supporting people who are supporting prison. And I think that's the main thing, because it's bloody hard work.
Yeah, that thing you said about how when you first go as a visitor, you look one way and bit by bit, it wears you down. It's quite powerful, isn't it? What are your hopes for Elliot?
And my hope for Elliot is that he continues to speak out, be proud about his past, use his past as a portfolio. We've got a TED Talk next year as well.
Have you?
We can do that together.
Together?
Yeah. And it's about us both standing together, because there are two sides of the story, the inside and the outside. And just because you've got bars in between you, you can make your bond stronger than those bars. If you're lucky enough to have someone that loves you and you're on the inside, then you can make that work, but not through punishing each other for the past.
That was going to be almost my next question. But what has the whole experience of addiction, of death, of social media and prison taught you? And are there any positives you can take from it all?
So on the account, you'll see that there are times where I was quite suicidal. I was really depressed. There were some really psychotic behaviours going on. You just feel like you've got no control over the people around you or your own life. Now, you can either sink with that stuff, but what does that do, really? Or you can start to speak out and help people. But it's people stepping forward going, my dad died and he was addicted to heroin, or I am addicted, or I don't know what to do next. And I say that I'm not a support service, but I can forward you to people who I think could help. I get hundreds of messages a day, life stories, people pleading for help. I can't take that on.
Yeah, as I've said several times, I really would recommend going to follow Lisa. So this has been amazing, getting to know a lot about your fascinating and incredible story around Blue Bag Life. But I was really also interested to broaden the conversation out to my Instagram audience. So I always do a bit where I ask them a few questions, because it's often really interesting and revealing. So I asked my followers, have you or someone in your immediate family ever been in prison? 12% had. The population is only 0.13% of the population are in prison. That is actually way above, which I thought was interesting. Then I asked them, what do you think of the prison service? And these are the words they used to describe it. Broken, terrifying, that I have little or no faith in it. Overcrowded and underfunded. Archaic, expensive and not effective. Corrupt, there must be a better way. It could be such an empowering system, but it's just depressing instead. Is it as bad as it should be? Too lenient, not enough money in it to the detriment of all, and pointless. People need rehabilitation and real support. Prisons do not do that. And then I asked them what they would like to ask someone who is in prison. And their answers, again, really interesting. Are you okay? Was it worth it? Did you do it? Are you here because you committed a specific crime or because society failed you? Are you scared? What's the food like? How do you get the drugs? Were you ever excluded from school? Do you agree with the sentence you received? Does the time go slowly? What do you miss? What support would you have liked when you were younger? What have you learned about yourself since being in prison? What do you think about in the depths of the night? And what can I do to help you? Should I ask Elliot those, actually? It'd be really interesting. I always like to try and do some kind of Jerry Springer wrap up at the end, but this has almost been too much for my brain to compute in one go. How do I feel? I feel, sad about the prison system, but I feel that there's something brewing in what you're doing and that hopefully it will add up to something great. And with everything, I guess, at the centre of what both of us are trying to do, that keeping things hidden from the world and out of conversation is not the answer. And actually putting faces and telling stories can only be powerful, can't it?
Indeed.
So this is a bit that I call the bit before the end, where I ask you if there's anything in particular you want to shout about or promote.
We've got the book that's coming out, published by Penguin. All the writing's in. They're just having a look over it at the moment. Mainly I'm going to be going on talks around the country. I'm going to continue supporting students who I work with to make the art that they want to make, to help say the things that they want to say, and truly connect with the things that they believe in. I want to work with a lot of families supporting people in prison. I'm also going to do a creative writing workshop in a men's prison soon. Oh. So let's see how that grows.
Mm. And well, you're busy.
and then of course Elliot's coming out, so we're going to get him a van.
And then last but not least, going back to the title of the podcast, which is honestly, who do you wish you could have an honest conversation with, and what would you say? Could be a celeb, a friend, a younger version of yourself.
I'd like to have an honest conversation with my mother.
Would you?
Again, I'd like to talk about motherhood, and I asked her a lot of questions before she died, but she said she did the best that she could, and I just wondered what that really meant. I think that's the only person I'd like to sit down and ask some more questions. Mm-hmm. Now I've had a bit more time to think about them. I'd also like to know if she was proud of me.
Well, how could she not be?
Thanks, Clemmy.
I am. I'm not your mother, though. Oh. Anyway, I've been Clemmy Telford, and this lovely lady has been Lisa Selby, and this has been Honestly. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it. And before I go, one final thank you to F&F Clothing, without whom this podcast wouldn't have been possible. By supporting Honestly, these guys are making it possible for me to have these frank and open conversations about sticky, tricky, and otherwise not spoken about subjects. I've been Clemmy Telford, and this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for joining me in getting frank and getting open. We've hit that part, the shameless plug, but at least I'm being honest, right? That's the name of the game. So please do share your thoughts and reviews, tell your mates all about it, and better still, why not press the big subscribe button? That way you'll get weekly doses of unadulterated honesty from me, Clemmy Telford. Thanks very much.